Up ahead on this edition of the Bull Zone, we have Joshua Vinson stopping by, a Derrick Rose beat writer, along with covering other players around the NBA to discuss some Bulls talk, some Derrick Rose talk, and this team moving forward. This will be a two-part episode. We got into some crazy things, so stay tuned and enjoy. Welcome back to the Bull Zone. I'm Jason, and with me today we have a special guest, Joshua A. Vinson. You can follow him on Twitter at the Joshua A. Vinson, Chicago Bulls, Derrick Rose beat writer, and all things Chicago Bulls, covering other multiple players throughout the NBA. It's a pleasure to have you on, Josh. What's going on, man?
Oh, not too much, man. Just enjoying this great season. I'm enjoying it. Now I'm looking.
You just got to be shaking your head at some of these people on Twitter being a Derrick Rose beat writer.
It's rough, man. It's like you get two different worlds. You get the, oh my God, I love Derrick Rose, and then you get the, oh my God, trade him. And it's just like, you know, it's rough. But hey, you know, it makes the job interesting, I must say.
So at the beginning of this year, did you think that here in April you would be talking about the Bulls being on life support, on the outside looking in at the playoffs, just counting on the Indiana Pacers and the Detroit Pistons to lose some games and allow them to sneak into the playoffs?
No, not at all. If someone would have told me back in late October or early November that, hey, right around April, you know, the 5th to 6th, you'll be planning your off-season plans. Not for May, not for June. You'll be planning it for, like, next week. I was like, you're crazy. I mean, I think, like, everybody that pays attention to the Bulls, I thought that the Bulls were going to, I'm not going to say go the distance as far as going all the way to the finals, but for sure, the Bulls were going to try to get revenge versus Cleveland and try to dethrone King James, something that they just can't do, whether he's in Miami or whether he's in Cleveland. And, you know, the season just started going on, and next thing you know, it's like, wow, as you mentioned, the Bulls are on life support at this moment. And, yeah, I did not think that the Bulls would be here, nor did I think I would be here. Yeah, so this is bad. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, and I got to give credit where credit is due. I kind of bashed this guy back in August. He wrote an article for ClippsNation.com, why the Chicago Bulls will not make the playoffs. Robert Flom, August 19th, 8:01 a.m., made the claim that the Bulls would not make the playoffs, and I lit him up on our Bulls on Twitter account, basically calling him an idiot, that he had certain teams who – I think he got 6 out of the 8 teams in the playoffs right now, or in the playoff hunt right now, correct. Cleveland Cavaliers, Miami Heat at 2, Wizards at 3. That was inaccurate, obviously. Hawks at 4, Raptors 5, Bucks, again, inaccurate at 6. And then the Celtics and the Pacers rounding out 7 and 8. So I laughed at that. I was like, are you kidding me? All those teams you have in front of the Chicago Bulls? And yeah, I mean, just reading that, then making fun of it, and then coming back and kind of eating my own words, I never thought I'd have to do that.
Right. You're definitely going to have to send him an apology card. sure. I think we all do. You know, I mean, I know we're going to jump right into it, but, you know, I think everyone thought, all right, we're going to bring in Fred, right? He's going to be the offense that the Bulls team needed. Their personnel was pretty much the same with the addition of, like, Bobby Portis at that time, you know, way before they got Justin Holiday. So, you know, you would think, and on paper, you know, everyone being healthy, you know, you would think that the Bulls would just be successful. And it was just like one thing happened after another, you know, with Derrick got popped in the eye, and then, you know, he was down for a little while, and then next thing you know, he came back, and then he wasn't doing too well, but he was trying to play with blurred vision, and the next thing you know, Noah went down, and Dunleavy back situation in between that time, and then Gasol had issues, JB got injured out in Denver. It was just like all of these different things just started happening, and then next thing you know, the Bulls was like a .500 team, and you were and you're scratching your head like, wait, what's happening here? And yeah, now we're at the point where, you know, give or take, the Pacers win a couple of games and the Bulls drop, you know, the next two games, which is a tough. You know, you have to go down to Miami and then come right back to Chicago and face Cleveland. Mm. That's tough.
Yeah.
Regardless of whatever, you know, opponents the Pacers and then the Pistons have, you know. So, you know, I mean, it's pretty much over with. I mean, unless some unforeseen thing happens where the Pacers just lose out or the Pistons just lose out and the Bulls do the unthinkable, it's pretty much over with, yeah.
Right now, the magic number for the Pistons is 1, Pacers is 2. Remaining schedule for the Pistons is Magic, Wizards, Heat, Cavaliers, and the Pacers have the Raptors, Nets, Knicks, and Bucks. So Pacers having a magic number of 2, that's the closest for the Bulls because they do own that tiebreaker, but they have the easiest schedule. I mean, the Raptors, yeah, they're probably going to give them some problems, and I see them winning that game, Raptors that is. But then you have the Nets, who are just absolutely horrific right now. The Knicks, who some nights can come out and play ball, and other nights the Nets could beat them. And then you have the Bucks in the same situation as the Knicks. So, yeah, they could go, you know, they potentially could go 1-3 there, with their only win being against the Nets. And the Bulls, though, with the Heat, the Cavs, the Pelicans, and then the terrible 76ers, there is a there's a chance, like a 0.009 chance. I think they have a better chance of getting a top 3 pick right now at 1.9%. And they do it making
That's true. So in other words, the Bulls may have a better chance of getting Ben Simmons versus making it to the playoffs. Hey, you know, I guess if you're a Bulls fan, this is a win-win situation. I mean, you could possibly either get Ben. There's a higher percentage to get Ben versus get into the playoffs. So you always have to look at the glass half full type thing. You know, that's what I try to talk people off the bridge every day. Yeah.
The current 9th position in the lowly Eastern Conference that everybody seems to make fun of.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. Everyone on the beat, we're all shocked, to be honest. You know, just going into that locker room last night in Memphis, and it was just like you could just see everyone was pretty much defeated. And the last time I saw that, and I don't always go on the beat, but the last time I saw the Bulls that defeated in a locker room was when they lost in that overtime, lost to the Utah Jazz. Mm-hmm. And you could just feel the energy like this. It was terrible. You could just feel the agony of defeat. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of people ask that question, like, well, what are the Bulls going to do? You know, if they don't make it, you know, what's the game plan? Who's on the move? You know, is it a rebuild? You know, and everyone has have all those questions. And it's just like, I don't think the Bulls know. Mm-hmm. Because you give Fred, because let me talk to the people that hate Fred. You have so many people that was ready to get rid of him, like after the, you know, 6 or 7 week of the schedule, they're ready to get Fred. And so this is my defense on Fred. Okay, so you have a first-time NBA coach, right? And he comes into, you know, the professional to try to coach the Chicago Bulls team. It's hard to tell players that were so defensive-minded to throw that book out the window and be all offensive. And it's like if you want to run Fred's system, you have to give Fred the tools to be successful. You know, you have to give him the tools to be successful. So I'm not saying what he had wasn't going to be successful, but if you're trying to run a Golden State-type offense, you're going to have Golden State-type players. And I'm not saying that Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose can't stand toe-to-toe with Klay. Don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is you're going to have that quick and fast pop, you know, type point guard and type shooting guard. You're going to have that, you know, in order to be successful. And the Bulls didn't have that. And so he did all these different things with the rotation. You guys remember when he had Noah coming off the bench and that made, you know, people feel some type of way. You know, he had all these different things going on. And as a rookie coach, that's what you're going to do. You're going to play around with the system. I mean, come on. If Tibbs was the coach, will we even know who Bobby Portis is? Like, probably not. So it's just like, you know, you play around with different pieces in the roster to try to make things happen. You know, 1 minute Tony Snell was there, and he kept missing open shots throughout the entire season. And now, is he still on the team? I think I saw him. I forgot he was even on the team for a minute there. Yeah, I think I may have saw him in Memphis. I don't know. I may have.
Towels in the locker room after the game.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I saw him somewhere in the locker room. I think he was eating some cherries or something. But the point that I'm making is that you have to give Fred the tools to be successful. So when people ask that, you know, question like, oh, will the Bulls rebuild? You know, what are you going to do? You know, there was a report that I guess in 1 minute Jimmy Butler was not necessarily that they were shopping for Butler, but they were trying to see if they could get anything possibly for Butler. You know, then you have that question of will you re-sign Derek or will you let him walk? And it's like, I don't know what the Bulls are going to do because they had an opportunity to make moves with Gasol before the trade deadline. But they didn't. They kept him. They got rid of Kirk for sales tax purposes or salary tax purposes or whatever, and then brought in Justin Holiday, which was a great addition in my opinion. But it was just like they kept Gasol, and it was like you could at least try to get something for Gasol, whether it was anything. A couple of second round, anything. I mean, I would have taken a pack of gum. Anything.
Thank you.
You know.
Thank you.
I mean, I would have taken a pack of gum, and it's no disrespect to Gasol. You know, nothing but love for Gasol, but it's just if you're trying to rebuild and you're trying, not necessarily rebuild ground up, but if you're trying to bring in something, bring in pieces that is going to help this offense and help this team be successful, you had a great asset there. So now the question is now, okay, so when the Bulls season and NBA season is over, is Gasol really going to re-sign with the Bulls? Is he really going to, you know, why would he if he could possibly go to another team and get more money and possibly chase out? I mean, he might as well go to Cleveland. I mean, you know, that seems like the prime destination, like Cleveland and Miami, right? So it's just like, I don't know. I think the Bulls really don't know. And then you have a lot of people saying, fuck our fire packs. Okay, you do that. You still have to give Fred the pieces to be successful. And that's what I think a lot of Bulls fans are missing. And it's like the Bulls have to make the decision, top to bottom from Jerry. He has to make the decision and say, okay, I want to rebuild this team. Or I like what I have now, but I need my head coach Fred to establish a system that's going to fit the players. Because great coaches do that. Great coaches can take the players that they have, and they can accommodate them with a system. They may have to adjust their personal system, and they can accommodate them with a system to work. And then great players can accommodate within a system. But when you have a coach that's, hey, I want all offense, and you have players that all they know is defense, something gives. And obviously the defense did. I mean, I don't know if they know how to guard anybody now. You know, I don't know if the Bulls – I don't even know their defensive rating right now. I'm sure it's probably – the worst in the league, considering some of the games that we've seen. So, if I'm a Bulls fan, I'm really scratching my head because I don't really know where this organization is going. I don't think they know, and that's what's really scary.
Yeah, and you brought up the point of having an offensive-minded coach, and you want to turn this team into an offensive team. Well, this team was built around defense, and that's what Tibbs was. I mean, he's basically has a Tibbs roster that he's trying to turn into an offensive component, and that's not what they are. They aren't an offensive team. They are nowhere near. Steve Kerr walked into a dream job. He just needs a little kink here and there. I mean, you have Jimmy Butler, for instance. CBE Fred from the Chicago Bullseye tweeted out today that ever since Jimmy Butler has come back in the last 14 games, he's shooting just 17% from three, 6 for 35. You want to have and Derrick Rose, we all know, is no amazing three-point shooter. He's got a nice little mid-range game. He's strength back throughout the season to be able to finish around the rim, which has been great to watch. But if you want to run something like similar to the Golden State Warriors, you're going to have your one and two guard be able to pull up from deep. And we don't have that in Chicago. So I think it was 2-3 years ago, a lot of people were trying to compare the Bulls to the San Antonio Spurs. It's like Bulls fans want whatever's working. the Spurs. So they wanted to mimic the Spurs. So they went out and Thibodeau kind of did model his the roster and the way that they played kind of after what the Spurs were doing. Slow pace offense, tough, gritty defense, won a lot of games that way. Now the Warriors, we're watching them just light up the NBA. And everybody wants to compare Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose to Klay and to Steph Curry, and it's two completely different teams, two completely different types of styles of gameplay. So, you know, Fred needs to find what he wants to do it his way, and then find players that are going to not only fit that system, but they're going to buy into that system. I think Jimmy and Derrick can fit into his system, but I also think that they need to 100% buy in, and I think Derrick Rose. It's easier for him to buy into the system. I think that he's an easy guy to coach. I question sometimes Jimmy Butler's motive and what Jimmy Butler's mindset is. He's got some comments as of late, actually throughout this season, that really, I mean, it's kind of turned me the wrong way on Jimmy. I was big time Jimmy fan throughout the summer, excited to watch what we've always wanted is a 1-2 guard combo, two all-star caliber players in the backcourt. And it seems like it's kind of split and gone in separate directions, and then it's just not going to work that way.
For sure. And you know, and that's something that a lot of reports came out with. You know, they were saying, oh, can Jimmy and Derrick play together? At one point, some of the media here in Chicago had people saying, or had it basically saying, that I guess Jimmy and Derrick were beefing or not getting along or whatever the case may be. You know, from my personal experience, you know, being there in the locker room, being on a beat, I have not seen any problem between Derrick and Jimmy. You know, you talk to Derrick, as far as I know, he has absolutely no problem with Derrick. I mean, with Jimmy. And the same thing, Jimmy has no problem with Derrick. I do know for a fact, though, what you're saying. Lately, Jimmy, you know, definitely some of those comments he's been making, I don't think him and Fred are necessarily on the same page. Now, you know, I'm not one of those guys who's going to say, oh, what sources say. No, I'm not saying all of that. I'm just saying ever since Jimmy called out his coach back in New York, I believe, back in December, I think that really made things uneasy. And yeah, Fred, you know, came out the next day and said, hey, you know, Jimmy and I, we talked about it, whatever the case may be. But when he called him out, that was, you know, that was problematic, mainly because the first thing you want to do is address the problem with that person. You know, if you have an issue with someone, you want to address the problem with that person. So for Jimmy to do that and then kind of play into the rhetoric of who team this is and stuff like that, you know, again, as you mentioned, moving forward, you know, this is a Mr. $95 million man, you know, so it's like, what do you do if you're the Bulls? If Jimmy is not going to fit into, you know, what Fred wants him to do or buy into what Fred wants him to do, or if he becomes a player that Fred feels as though he can't coach, you know, the question then becomes, you know, will you put him on a trade block? You know, would you try to get some young pieces or any draft picks or any young players that you possibly can get from Jimmy? I mean, I personally feel like Jimmy is a franchise player. You know, I was asked that earlier today. Someone was like, hey, you know, do you feel like you can build a franchise around Jimmy? Of course. You take, you know, a kid from Marquette that, you know, I wouldn't say not many people knew who he was, but I mean, he wasn't that. At the time when he came to the Bulls, no one thought that he was just going to become this all-star player, elite player that he's become. And that's who he is today. So I definitely feel like he's a franchise player. But as you mentioned, yeah, you know, if Fred has to really sit down and decide what it is that he wants to do and how he wants to run the system, and if Gar and Pax are going to be the guys that's over him, they have to allow him to do that. Because remember, that was the whole problem with Tibbs, right? Tibbs wants to go one way, and Gar and Pax wouldn't let him be great, as they say. And so you had this conflict. And then next thing you know, Tibbs get fired, you bring in Fred, and you think, hey, we're going to have the laugh, and look what happened. So it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, again, I do not think the Bulls know where they want to go. I wish I could write a piece about that, because I think that's what it really boils down to. I don't think the Bulls know exactly where they want to go. And when you talk to fans as well, I don't think they really know, because you'll have some people say, yeah, get rid of everybody, let's rebuild ground up. And then you have some people, well, no, we've been rebuilding since the Jordan era. You know, let's just get that one piece that we're missing. And I think it's a little more than just a one piece that the Bulls are missing. This season alone showed that it's a little more than that. You look at some of those losses the Bulls took this year, I counted about 11 different teams that they lost to, that they shouldn't have lost to, and they wouldn't be in this situation that they're in, you know, on that West Coast road trip. Should have never lost to Denver. No disrespect to Nuggets, but you should have never lost to Denver. You should have never lost to Minnesota twice this year. You should have never lost to Salt Lake, you know, to Utah Jazz out in Salt Lake City. You know,
back-to-back Knicks and then follow that up with Orlando Magic just went last at the end of last month. I
mean, exactly. You know, so when you look at things like that, I mean, they lost to the Phoenix Suns 1 week, and they also lost to the Brooklyn Nets that same week. Like, they took L's that you would scratch your head and say, come on, why are we taking this L? And even if some of those times it was a situation with Derek in his eye or he wasn't shooting too well, still, on paper, Derek or without Derek, two double vision, no vision, that team should have never lost to some of those teams that they lost to. And, you know, and as you mentioned, now you're in that ninth seed, hoping the Pistons or the Pacers or lose and you win. You know, the Bulls could, and Fred mentioned that last night postgame. Detroit lost yesterday. If the Bulls would have won versus Memphis last night, think about the level of confidence that would have gave them first and foremost, and that would have made things a little more interesting in the bottom of the Eastern Conference in terms of the playoffs. And then also, this is something everybody was scratching their head, even the Memphis media. The Bulls lost to the Memphis Grizzlies, and nobody even knew who any of those people were that were playing last night. Like, they were talking about Ryan Hollins and Jordan Farmar. If I'm not mistaken, they both went to UCLA. I think I was a kid when those guys were playing at UCLA. It's like the Bulls, you know, it was like, really? The Bulls lost to, and this, again, no disrespect to any of these players because I know I'm going to have to see them in the future, but the point that I'm making is it's like, really? You lost to, like, half the people in the Memphis media market don't know who is on the Grizzlies right now. Like, how do you lose to the Grizzlies? And you know this is a must-win. Like, I know all these games in the late has been must-wins, but come on. This was definitely a must-win.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you dropped that. And Detroit lost. That's what you were hoping for. You were hoping for Detroit or the Pacers to stumble. And Detroit lost. And you still couldn't, you know, gain on Detroit because of that. Yeah, It's rough. I tell you, it is rough.
Yeah, you let Matt Barnes and Vince Carter go for 16 and 17 points against you. Meanwhile, Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler combine for 17 points. I mean, you're never going to win a game like that. And a lot of people are blaming the injuries on why the Bulls are outside the playoff picture. The Memphis Grizzlies actually have more lost injuries or lost games due to injury than the Chicago Bulls. They're second in the NBA with 279 games lost to injury. And the Pelicans are first with 287. The Bulls are in seventh with 195. Now, all the other teams in that in front of them are well out of the playoff race. But still, 195, yes, I see it. Last year they had a grand total of 149 under Tibbs, and we complained about those injuries and how injury-riddled that season was for the Bulls. And that's obvious. I mean, we all know, and we all, I think, can realize that this season was by far the most injury-plagued season that any of us can remember in this era, I believe. Even the year that Derrick Rose went down with the ACL and it never came back the next season. I still don't think they had that many injuries, so...
Sure, yeah, you're right.
Injuries happen, but at the same time, I feel like with having Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, hell, even somebody that I really think that, yeah, he does a great job for the Bulls offensively, but being on the court, his offense a lot of times doesn't justify how bad he is defensively in Pau Gasol, but 90% of the time you had two of the three of those players on the court at all times, and to me, those are all all-star caliber players. So you have two all-star caliber players on the court. A lot of times to me, it felt like the bench really didn't do their job this year. You know, you had Mirotić who went out with an injury, but even before that injury, he had a chance to be a starter and to really turn the page and be the future powered forward for this team. And Fred did make a ballsy call at benching the heart and soul of this team and Joakim Noah. And it really, I think, set the tone for the year. And that's kind of, I think, where a possibility that things started to go wrong right from the get-go is when he made that call. But you saw Mirotić have his opportunity, did not fulfill that opportunity. Right now, he's gaining a little bit more fire. He's getting a shot and his confidence back finally, but it's coming a little too late. Doug McDermott, same thing. Very hot and cold shooter. I realize it's only his second year right now. I think he's got a bright future in the NBA. But other than that, outside of those two guys, I mean, Aaron Brooks was horrible this year. Absolutely horrible as a backup point guard. They let go of Kirk Heinrich. Didn't do much for the Bulls this season. You look at the bench. I just think that, you know, the starters weren't great. The injuries did happen. But also the bench, this is one of the worst bench performances that I've seen in recent years out of the Chicago Bulls. From top to bottom, from the first seat on that bench to the last seat on this bench, I just think that everybody kind of underperformed this year.
I agree. And you know, and that's and going back to the whole issue of the trade deadline, with me, I feel as though like the Bulls had a prime opportunity to improve their bench. They could have brought in a great secondary point guard. They could have, and when I say great, I'm not necessarily. I'm saying like they could have. Now people, you know, they give me a lot of hell for this, but they could have gotten a Trey Burke. You know, somebody that I feel as though would be very successful under a system like Fred. And you know, you bring in. I mean, they're not using him in Utah, so it's just like, you know, you bring in somebody like Trey, who, you know, who was benched out in Utah to be that offensive player coming off the bench. And it's just like, so if you have a game where, you know, maybe Derek isn't really, he's not following the bottom of the basket, you bring in somebody like Trey Burke, who's a great, you know what I'm saying, ball handler, who can definitely, he's great just with the ball in general. I mean, you know, he can definitely pass it off to anybody without even looking. Like, I just love him with the ball, just great. So it's just like, you could have brought in somebody like Trey Burke, you know, or really any point guard better than Aaron Brooks.
Oh, yeah, anybody would have been upgrade, I think.
Yeah, you know, anybody, you know what I'm saying?
Each one more could hardly handle the basketball, and he's an upgrade.
Right. And remember they were talking about possibly getting Shabazz Napier. It was like right before the trade deadline ended, and they were saying they were going to do like something with Shabazz Napier, and that didn't work out. So I was just saying, like, they could have brought in really anybody, and it would have worked out for the Bulls. But again, for whatever reason, whomever makes the final decision, they felt as though this team that we see today had enough to go the distance. Because when the trade deadline went past and absolutely nothing happened other than, you know, bringing in Justin Holiday and throwing Kurt down to Atlanta, that was it. You know, it was just like, yeah, you know, everybody thought it was like all these different things were going to happen, and it didn't, and that was it. And so it just made you really think like, well, wow, you know, what are the Bulls going to do? And so, you know, you thought after All-Star break that maybe the Bulls would be successful, and it's been terrible since then. So, as you mentioned, as far as the bench goes, you know, this season is going to be very interesting because Fred is going to have to really sit down with Darren Pax or whomever may be in charge at that time, since so many people are saying that, you know, Darren Pax may be on the move, which I doubt it. I think it's Gar. I don't see Paxton going anywhere. Really, I don't see either one of them going anywhere.
No.
Because unfortunately, you could chop this up and say, well, we had a new coach with a new system with some players that weren't necessarily comfortable in this system. We had a couple of injuries, so that's why the Bulls weren't successful. Yeah, and
the problem is that Gar Foreman always has an excuse to cover his ass. Mm-hmm. Every time.
And this would be a good one, you know. And so he may bar himself some time. If I'm a Bulls fan, I'm hoping that, you know, coming into next season, that we see brand new faces. But I don't really see it happening. I definitely don't see Gasol coming back. But then again, you have reports out there saying that, you know, they want to give Gasol $20 million. And, you know, I don't know. I've never talked to Gasol about this, but, you know, maybe he'd buy into that. You know, maybe the Bulls will all go out like they did in California. They went wine testing. Maybe the Bulls this offseason will all go out together, have dinner, and say, okay, we stunk it up last season. Let's give it one more last hurrah. This is Derek's free agency season coming up. Let's just give it one more good college try, as my mom would say. And hell, you may see the exact same roster that you sell this year.
I need to know what restaurant or where they're going for that so I can stand up right in the middle of all that and say, hell no. Hell, what?
No. They may. I mean, hey, I might give that suggestion. I'll be with the Bulls here in New Orleans. So I may give them that suggestion, like, hey, you guys should all just go out and have a good summer together, you know, throw a frisbee around at the beach and decide to all come back and, you know, give it another shot, you know, again.
Without
you can't blame it. Right. Exactly, right? But, you know, you can't blame injuries on this situation. I really think the issue, and you hit on this earlier when you talked about when Fred benched Noah, I really think the problem was you had a lot of those Bulls players that didn't want Tibbs to go. And I think that you brought in a rookie coach that honestly didn't know what he was doing. And think about it, the Bulls really, everybody on the Bulls team is pretty much veterans. You know, Derrick Rose's been in the league for a while, JB's been in the league for a while, Dinwiddie's been in the league since forever. So it's just like,
they're old.
Yeah, they're old. You know, this isn't like a young team like the 76ers or something where, you know, everybody is averaging around a year or two or three. You know, everybody on this team is pretty old. So you got a coach that honestly didn't know what he was doing. He couldn't get a roster together to perform. And it was just like, I think people just kind of started tuning him out. And maybe Jimmy was the biggest offender of that. And next thing you know, December comes and Jimmy makes his little statement about how he feels. And, you know, then you hear all these different reports about these different things Jimmy is doing and Jimmy is saying. And it's just like, you're never going to be successful. You know, your coach can still yell at the top of his lungs all day long and say, you know, hey, let's make this happen. But, you know, what does that mean? And that's something that Fred mentioned yesterday. He said in Memphis, he was like, you know, I told the team I haven't given up on you all year now, so I'm not going to do it now. I'm thinking, like, well, we got, what, 4 or 5 games left? Like, you know, like this, I think the nail has been in the coffin for a little minute now. Like, you know, at what point? And this is another thing that I do not like about the Bulls. You know, do you remember when I think it was Golden State. I think they were playing like Oklahoma City or somebody, and they were down pretty big at halftime. I don't want to mistake that, but I think it was something like that. And the reporter came out that Draymond went in the locker room and started cussing out everybody. You remember that, right? Yeah. Okay, the Bulls don't have that person. And some people say, well, that was Noah, but he's out with the shoulder situation. But the Bulls don't have that person because where's the sense of urgency? Yeah, okay, cool. Derrick Rose got on the cameras last night and said his job was not to F up the game. Okay, cool. You know, Derrick is known for saying his choice word here or there. You may remember last year when they played Cleveland, you know, and he said, kept saying we're going to keep getting our asses kicked, you know, and all of that. You know, and everybody was all ramped up. The Bulls need that voice. And they don't have that, you know, and even Derek has said on the record, you know, hey, I'm not the type of, you know, he's not the person that's going to be the loud vocal person because he's a quiet person in nature. He is. But you have to have somebody that's going to say, hey, look, Detroit got a rough schedule or Indiana got a rough schedule. We got to come down here and blow out Miami and make a statement. We don't give a damn if Cleveland is playing LeBron or not. When they come into the UC on Saturday, we have to make a statement. We should blow out New Orleans, just like all these teams that's playing the Pelicans this weekend, the Lakers and the Suns, and then the Bulls are coming in town. They should blow out New Orleans. You know, New Orleans, again, is another team like the Memphis Grizzlies. We don't know who plays for the Pelicans right now. And then their last game is the 76ers. We should blow out the 76ers. We should win out. We're going to win out. You need that person on the team. But if everybody's just walking their separate ways, oh, well, you know, we lost in Memphis. Let's go to Miami. You know, you're not going to have much success with that.
Let me be an all-star and take 8 shot attempts, you know. I think a lot of people may lean on Taj Gibson or think Taj Gibson is now that guy. And I think if it is anybody, from the reports that I've heard, and just the respect that I think that anybody in that locker room would get. Taj Gibson would be the guy that I think, because my theory is, and I think some others share the same theory, Pau Gasol kind of, once he came to Chicago and Taj Gibson was set to be the man once Boozer left, he was set to be the new power forward, starting power forward, him and Joe. Next thing you know, here comes Pau Gasol. Taj Gibson now goes from 99% sure I'm going to be the starting power forward to, here comes Pau Gasol, I'm back on the bench. Like, I've spent my whole entire life here in Chicago playing on the bench. Mm-hmm. And then next season, you fast forward it, Joakim Noah, starting power forward next to Pau Gasol. Who happens to come into town? Another Spaniard is going to take the power forward starting spot. So now Joakim Noah and Taj Gibson, both lifelong Bulls players, they've lost their starting jobs to these new players, these guys that can shoot the outside jump shot but don't play defense. What Joe and what Taj stand for is a quote unquote Chicago basketball, you know, blue collar basketball. And now you're just changing the whole entire view of what this team looks like. And I think from the start of Pau Gasol coming here, it kind of, the locker room started to split a little bit. So what you have here is a split locker room, and I've heard reports that it's, you know, Jimmy Powell, they're kind of, you know, in cahoots, and obviously it's Nico over there with Powell. They're speaking in Spanish to each other, you know, doing their thing in the corner, sipping on some tea. And then you got like Derrick Rose off in the corner by himself, chilling. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. I've never been in a locker room. But then you've got Taj Gibson basically standing right in the middle, you know, in the middle of the line, being that vocal guy, trying to bring everybody back together, trying to be what Luol Deng was, in that glue guy. You know, Taj doesn't really have a side. Sure, he probably is not the biggest fan of Nico Mirotic because he took a starting job at the beginning of the year. Or Joakim Noah, I'm sorry, or whatever. You know, maybe he should have been starting over Nico at the beginning of the year, and now, yes, he is the starter, and damn right he should be the starter over Mirotic. But I think if anybody in that locker room is going to be the glue guy and that vocal guy that's going to call them together and say exactly what you just said here on the show, it's going to be Taj Gibson. And I look for him to do that, you know. But you can't have – I tweeted this out today. You can't have a team meeting going into the last week of the NBA season and expect to get results. It's just not going to happen. If you're having a team meeting in the last week of the NBA season, you're done. Like, that's
that's the thing, though. The Bulls, sorry to interrupt, but that's the thing, though. The Bulls, you may remember in Salt Lake City, after the Bulls lost to the Jazz in that overtime, and we asked Derek, we said to him, we said, hey, you know, will you guys sit down and have a talk? And he said at that time, he was like, well, no, this wouldn't be a good time. You know, when would be a good time?
Right.
It should have been a follow-up question. Because, like you mentioned, when do you wait now to April, you know, 5th, 6th, and you're sitting here scratching your head wondering, oh, well, should we have this team meet? You know, that's the thing. When you mentioned about the locker room, I will say this. If the Bulls, if there are cliques on this team, man, they have a good way of hiding it, because you definitely don't see that in the locker room. I mean, all the beat writers will tell you, on a home game, you won't see anybody in the locker room. You might see Bobby Portis come in and he forgot his charger. You might see Bobby. I think I saw Derek in the locker room twice this whole season, pregame. One day, I think they were playing somebody either on ESPN or TNT, and he was rolling on a foam roller. And I was just like, what? I've never seen Derek, you know, do that on at the United Center. And then it was another time, you know, we got the chance to actually talk to him, actually just this past week, when they were asking him about his elbow. That was when they played the Pistons, because, yeah, the Bulls went to Detroit. I mean, they went to Milwaukee the next day. But, as far as, like, the locker room setup goes, I mean, you know, I know Derek and Bobby Portis, you know, their lockers are right beside each other. They seem pretty cool. I mean, everyone seemed cool. They don't necessarily have the vibe like other locker rooms have that I've been into. Like, when you're in the Clippers locker room, no matter what people want to say about the Clippers, they have a nice camaraderie. Like, you can tell they have, like, brotherhood. You know, they have music going. They're joking around. They're having fun. You know, the same thing with the Wizards. You go into a Wizards locker room. Now, I've never been to, you know, Verizon Center, you know, in D.C., but when the Wizards are in Chicago, and I've been there, you know, you got Kelly Oubre over there dabbing and John Wall and everybody just, you know, having a great time. They win together, they lose together. Like, they, and then that's something Kelly Oubre and I talked about before when we were talking about this team chemistry. That's something that you really don't see with the Bulls. You know, a lot of, and on the road, and I'll see them in New Orleans, and I was there in Memphis, like, people just kind of had their headphones on. They were just, it was quiet. You know, Derek, yeah, it was quiet.
It's not what you want to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it was quiet. I mean, I've never really seen them interact like, I mean, they talk to each other, though. I don't want to paint the picture like they don't talk to each other. They talk, yeah, they talk to each other, but it's not the same like other locker rooms. Like, and the best examples would be the Clippers and would be the Wizards, because those locker rooms, like, you can tell, like, there's this bond, you know, brotherhood off and on the court. And I think it plays a big role into what you do on the court as well. Man, you know, just to say the least, really, the Bulls, I think, were the biggest disappointment this season of all teams in the organization throughout the association. You know, yeah, the Rockets, you could put the Rockets up there. There are other teams you could put up there as well. But I would say the Pelicans, for sure, you could put the Pelicans up there. But I would say for whatever reason, the Bulls, they just didn't, I don't think they received, I don't think they received Fred well. Mm-hmm. And I think it, and that falls back to Gar and Pax, because the way everything went down with Tibbs, and how that was pretty much lingering over last season. That, you know, you couldn't, any Bulls player will probably tell you, you couldn't have a post-game interview or any interview with any media member without somebody talking about Tibbs in that situation, you know, because it was known. All these reports were coming out. You remember last year during the playoffs? I mean, it was everywhere. Like, it was almost to the point where you had beat writers almost tweeting, this is Tibbs' last game. Like it was bad. It was that bad in Chicago, you know, and it's, and, you know, so I don't think the Bulls players really received that well. And so when you had, you know, Fred come in, he's this cool guy and, you know, real friendly. You know, I mean, if you've never been to the Midwest, he's like a great example of what someone from the heartland. I like Chicago, but like the heartland, cornfield, you know, I'm describing mm-hmm. Ace, Iowa, right? Like he was that kind of a guy, very friendly, very open, very honest, you know, guy. He's trusting. He's the type of person that will say, hey, if you give me $100, I'll give it back to you tomorrow. You just trust. You just open your wallet and be like, hey, here you go. He's that trusting. And it's just like, I don't think that the Bulls players really received him well. And it translated on the court. And you're right. When he did those different things with rotations, you know, benching some of the vets, these other younger guys have opportunities to fit into whatever system he was trying to draw up. I know that didn't go well, you know, because no matter what a player may say, they can say all day long, hey, you know, I'm just enjoying the process, this coach's decision. You know, I read a story today about Trey Burke and the Utah Jazz and his benching situation. I'm like, they can say that all day long, but you didn't come to the NBA to just ride the oak. You came to the NBA to be great, to be the next Jordan or Kobe. You know what I'm saying? You or try to at least accomplish some of the things that they did. You didn't come to the NBA to be on the revolving door right out, right? So, yeah, it's one of those things where I can definitely understand that, you know, Noah was more than likely pissed. Taj was more than likely pissed. People were probably pissed, and things just didn't go well. And then, you know, it didn't help, you know, that Derek had an eye situation. It didn't help Dunleavy had his back. It didn't help that, you know, JB went down. It didn't help that Gasol, you know, had a hand problem at one point. It didn't help that, you know, and it was just like, it was more burden, more burden, more burden. And then again, you know, you could really tell what the future was going to be like of the Bulls at, during the trade deadline. And again, when the Bulls made absolutely really no moves at all, they were really convinced with the team that they have now, they could be successful. And that's what really made me scratch my head, because I'm thinking, hey, this is a prime opportunity to get whatever you can get, because what you have now is not going to be LeBron. What you have now is not going to be Dwayne Wade. You know, what you have now probably is not going to be Paul George and company. You know what I'm saying? What you have now is not going to be Tobias Harris and company. So it's just like, you might as well trade whatever, whomever you can, get whatever, whomever you can, and just start building so far it can be successful, you know, and nothing happened. So now we're here.
I think maybe they thought too at the trade deadline, like, hey, let's just see what we got. We know we have talent. If they could just buy into the system, get healthy, who knows? Who knows what could happen? But once again, I just think that the minds in that front office, either they're too afraid to make a big move or to trade a key player away because they might drop them out of playoff contention, which, as we see now, fast forward a few months and you see that it didn't matter anyway. But
right,
if they're afraid of that and they have to try their hardest for Reinsdorf to get into the playoffs to make that extra cash for Chicago, for the Bulls, I'm sure that plays a part of it, but at the same time, don't come out and lie to your fans. Don't start losing trust in your fans even more than you already have by coming out and saying you're going to pay the dude $20 million when you know damn well that you're not. Capman, on the Capman show on ESPN 1000, he was on, I think he was on with Nick Friedel a few weeks ago. And one of his guys who's close to the Bulls organization said that he talked to Gar Foreman, and Foreman said, well, what did you want me to say? Did you want me to say, yeah, we'll probably get rid of him in the summer. He's not really our guy. We were trying to make the playoffs. So of course I was going to say whatever I needed to say to keep his mind, you know, at ease, is basically what he was saying. So,
wow.
It came back that he was basically just, you know, feeding the line to the fans just so Powell heard it, just so that Powell would stay ready to go. And, hey, we'll see what happens this summer with Pau Gasol. But, no, he's not coming back. I can almost all but guarantee you that Pau Gasol will not be in a Bulls uniform next year. It's just, it would be ridiculous. I mean, if they're watching the same games that we're watching and seeing Pau Gasol do what he does defensively, I've never seen a lazier defender ever in the NBA, ever.
Yeah, it was bad. Do you remember the Rockets game just last week when they had Fred put, I think Felicio was in the game at the time, and the Bulls, you know, got on that run They actually started leading.
They're down 15 or something, I believe.
Right, exactly. And so he put Gasol back in, And he turned the ball over on the first two possessions. And, like, the momentum just went completely on the other side of the spectrum. And it was like the Rockets were 3 points away from tying that game up at the end of the fourth quarter. And it was crazy.